advertise your event. By all means, Graphix is a proud publisher of the Entertainment Guide, and we'd be happy to help you spread the word. Visit us at 17 Bridge Square or give us a call at 507-663-7937.
The team at Witt Brothers Auto Care would like to thank Northfield and the surrounding communities for naming them 2022's Best Auto Repair Shop. Stop down to 701 Division Street and visit the staff at Witt Brothers, nominated as the best mechanics in southern Minnesota, to make sure your vehicle is ready for all of your summer travel plans. Visit Witt Brothers in downtown Northfield to make sure you get the best service for all of your automotive, maintenance, and repair needs. The voters have spoken, and when you need the best of the best, Witt Brothers is here for
helping
you.
Helping our neighbors, working hard to take care of our families, protecting our natural resources. These are the values that unite southern Minnesota. And there's a new candidate for state representative who will bring our values to the Capitol, Christy Purcell. Christy Purcell has been getting it done for southern Minnesota, protecting our clean air and water, and standing up for farmers and landowners in the Cannon River watershed. As our state representative, Christy Purcell will take on drug and insurance companies to lower health care costs. Christy Purcell will partner with local leaders to provide more funding for public safety and to improve access to mental health services, with better treatment for addiction and more mental health resources in our schools to keep our kids safe and healthy. If getting things done is your thing, you'll like Christy Purcell. This independent expenditure is paid for by the DFL House Caucus. It is not coordinated with or approved by any candidate, nor is any candidate responsible for it.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Monday, September 19th, 9:02 a.m., and we are pleased to bring you Legal Talk this morning, our monthly conversation with Minnesota State Supreme Court Justice Gordon Moore. Good morning, Gordon.
Morning, Rich.
How are you?
I'm well. Happy Monday.
Well, okay. Thanks. My daughter's getting married in a couple of weeks, and we kind of struggled to find somebody to officiate the service. And you just reminded me that you performed a service over the weekend. I wish I'd thought about that. I would have asked you if you were busy October 1st.
I did a wedding in Duluth for friends of a family that we knew in Worthington. And
right.
My wife Jane played keyboards for it. It was a lot of fun. But judges, retired judges, can perform weddings, and civil services seem to be kind of almost on the increase. A lot of young couples
sure.
like the sort of one location
yep.
or everything.
One stop shopping.
Yes.
Yeah.
It moves from the same hall is used for the service, the dinner and
yep.
the dance, all
yep.
sort of in the same thing.
That's how we're doing it up at our family's cabin. So it's all going to be right there. Wedding's going to be in the backyard. Reception's going to be in the front yard.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
It's nice, but no, it was fun. Duluth is an amazing city. Multiple weather zones within the
yeah,
same zip
right.
code. Frankly, had rain on Saturday, cleared off, and was quite pleasant. By the
yeah.
time of the funeral,
so that's what Supreme Court justices do on their off days,
occasionally,
yeah, okay.
not all the time. And this is something I do for people that I know,
which
it's
is really,
sort of a special thing.
It is a special thing. We got married by a Supreme Court justice. That's kind of cool. Yeah. So, but on your on days. You guys are back to work now. You guys are back to the Supreme Court is back to hearing oral arguments now.
Yes, we held arguments the first 2 weeks of September, right after Labor Day. We started just like the kids, first day of school, first day of oral arguments was the Tuesday after Labor Day. September's calendar, I think, could be summarized as, first-degree murder, frankly.
Sorry, that's not even
no,
funny.
No, it's
but
not. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
Direct appeals and then what we call post-conviction relief appeals.
Mm-hmm.
People that are convicted have a right to have a court potentially review that based on a statute called the Post-Conviction Relief Statute. And the Minnesota Supreme Court gets all appeals on first-degree murder, the most serious type of murder, generally premeditated, go right to the Supreme Court. So we had a number of those cases on our docket for September. We have an interesting public hearing coming up tomorrow on the cameras in the courtroom initiative,
which is
something that I think people have lots of interest in.
A lot of interest in. I mean, you know, you and I were actually discussing this a little bit last week. The media would very much like to have cameras in the courtroom, and for a lot of reasons. It's funny. I'm a member of the media. Of course, I'm on the radio, but I'm a member of the media who does not necessarily favor cameras in the courtroom. And we're going to talk about right to privacy in a little bit, but it does feel, and I guess it's just the way I grew up in Minnesota and, like, you know, seeing the courtroom sketches and things. It feels a little, cameras in the courtroom feels a little bit invasive to me.
Well, Rich, first of all, this is a very challenging and controversial question. And
can I interrupt you for just one moment and say, I do not expect you, and please, I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, please do not give us any sort of opinion.
No, I will not. We are listening tomorrow to the opinions of a number of speakers that have asked us to have the opportunity to speak. We've received a lot of written submissions. I can tell you there are opinions on both sides of the issue.
Yeah.
They're quite strong.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of considerations to factor in, you know, the victims of crime, their rights, the rights of jurors,
right.
The right of the people. I mean, things changed in this discussion after the Derek Chauvin trial. There's
right.
no question about it.
Right.
It was the first case live stream that I know from a Minnesota courtroom.
That
you know,
I can remember,
Florida, yeah. California, you turn on the court TV channel and you know there's cases all the time. It's not a big deal. But as you point out, Minnesota has not had that tradition. So the rule committee that governs criminal procedure rules has been studying this issue, and we're going to hear from the proponents and from the folks that are concerned about it. And,
yeah.
You know, it's going to be a very interesting hearing. We will have to make a decision based on that, whether to amend our rules.
Can I ask you who brought that case?
It was initiated, I think, basically by the Supreme Court after the Chauvin trial.
Okay.
We felt, you know, this has been an ongoing discussion. There had been some changes a few years ago to the rules. The court had allowed a little bit of opportunity based on consent of parties in certain types of proceedings. But after the Chauvin trial, I think there was a sense that this issue needed to be looked at again and more broadly. And so there is a lot of different thought processes on what should happen.
So I just learned something. The Supreme Court itself can initiate a case and decide to
well,
look at something.
It's not a case, Rich. It's
right.
we have the responsibility for the practice of law in the state of Minnesota and the rules that govern the practice
sure.
of law. And
right.
so, yeah, the Supreme Court has the right to study issues that come up. And oftentimes issues are brought to our attention. This is one that I think came from a combination of circumstances, advocates, as well as the court itself. So, yeah, we'll listen tomorrow. There won't be an immediate decision issued, but there will be an opportunity for people interested to watch the argument live streamed on mincourts.gov. Go to the Supreme Court site and you can find out how to watch a Supreme Court argument. And that will be tomorrow. And then we move into October's calendar right after the turn of the month for, I think we're actually back in our, we have two courtrooms and we're actually going to be hearing some arguments in the Judicial Center, which will be a first for me, frankly, because we've been doing them only in our Capitol courtroom for COVID reasons. And I think we're going to be using that courtroom for our second week. But yeah, stay tuned. We have, I think the October calendar is a more typical mix of civil cases, attorney discipline cases, some criminal appeals, what we call petitions for review from the Court of Appeals. With a number of really interesting questions. And I'm always astounded that, you know, just lurking behind the surface of some of these cases are some, you know, really challenging issues that sometimes, you know, you don't really see until you're digging into the case preparing for the arguments. So,
right.
Yeah, but the rest of this month will be the public hearing. We have court meetings, special term meetings, where we decide whether we're going to take cases for later in the year, and then trying to get opinions done that are still outstanding.
Right. And the Supreme Court is going to take the show on the road a little bit in a program that I was not aware of and got suspended during COVID. But you're going to hear oral arguments in front of the student body in Shakopee High School.
We are. We're going, poor Shakopee. They typically, the Supreme Court does two of what we call road shows a year. In the fall, we typically have gone to an outstate jurisdiction, mm-hmm. high school, and then in the spring, typically a metro area jurisdiction. Shakopee was on the list for the spring of 2020. That obviously didn't happen. It's been rescheduled and postponed at least twice. And so we are honoring our commitment to Shakopee. We are going to Shakopee. I don't have the specific date right in front of me. I could get that pretty quickly here, but I believe it's the 13th of October. Don't quote me on that. But again, the calendar is on the Supreme Court website. But yes, we are going to have a case argued in front of the Shakopee High School student body, and then we get to talk to students. We go to classrooms. It's really a fun opportunity to engage with high school students.
And I would think for a lot of the, maybe not all of them, but a lot of those students, it's just a fascinating opportunity to watch and see how this works.
It is. And it happened in 2014 in my former community of Worthington. And yeah, I can tell you we had 2,500 kids in that gym from all surrounding schools. It was a big deal, very big deal for kids to have the opportunity to watch the Supreme Court argument. And to emphasize, this is a real argument. This isn't like a mock trial episode or something. This is a real live oral argument with attorneys, real questions, and you know we have to make a decision based on that. And so, yeah, we also go to law schools. We do an argument before each of the three law schools in Minnesota over the course of the years. But the high school opportunity is really unique. In the outstate areas, the court, when it travels, also will do sometimes a community dinner.
Okay.
Where if we're doing an overnight stay, we'll actually have a dinner with educators and leaders of the community and some, you know, students as well. And that's a good opportunity to mingle and to talk to people.
Yeah. Feels like one of those old-fashioned team-building exercises. You and the rest of the justices going out for a couple of days just to...
I think it is. It's exactly that, Rich. Yeah. I think it breeds a collegiality.
Yeah.
You know, you eat together, you work together.
Right.
I think it's really an important thing, and frankly something that last one of these we did was in the fall of 2019 in Fairmont, Minnesota, down in Martin County, and I was not in the court at that time, but I happened to be there because it was in my former judicial district, mm-hmm. so the trial judges often showed up for those things, and yeah, the community of Fairmont showed up for a big way. So the court's very interested in continuing this tradition. I think it's something everybody looks forward to.
That's cool. That's really cool. I'm glad you guys do that. So for a number of reasons, right to privacy has been sort of on my mind, and I thought maybe today would be a good day to at least begin talking about this subject. It's a huge, very, very big and complex subject, and I don't think we can sum it up in one of these little conversations.
No.
But I thought maybe today might be a good time to introduce the idea of right to privacy and what it is. And Jeff Johnson, the host of the KYMN Morning Show, and I were talking this morning about how it's not explicitly written down in the Constitution. It's not explicitly written into the Minnesota Constitution,
right.
But it has been identified by the Supreme Court, by the state Supreme Court. Can you tell us a little bit about the right to privacy?
I can, Rich, and I have to first give the caveat that this is obviously, as you point out, a complex and evolving area. It involves things that could well come to the court. And so I'm not going to be saying anything about any particular case or controversy.
Nope.
I can't make any promise or commitment to anything, and I wouldn't. Generally speaking, though, I can tell you that the right to privacy is a phrase that is used kind of generally and frankly, non-descriptively,
mm-hmm.
it really refers to things that come from three different sources. One is, as you point out, the Minnesota and federal constitutions, and a right to privacy has been found to exist in both of those foundational documents by courts. Also, privacy rights can come from common law. Minnesota and other states have, you know, common law that is developed by judges where rights can be recognized, and usually claims for the mm-hmm. violations of those rights mm-hmm. come forward. And then, of course, the state legislature oftentimes categorizes things as being private or protected under laws such as the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act and other laws governing privileges mm-hmm. for information. So you've got these three different areas that all kind of come under this umbrella of privacy rights. But as you point out, you and Jeff are right. Now, the Minnesota Constitution Bill of Rights doesn't say anything about the right of privacy. In fact, if you look, you won't even see the right. You won't even see the word privacy
really
in the Minnesota Constitution. It is a doctrine that has been the product of developments in constitutional analysis. I found a case in 1941 where the state Supreme Court noted how Minnesota's constitution protects rights, is was characterized back then as inherent in the people, such as life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, right to acquire, purchase, and enjoy property, and the right to establish a home and familial relations. It was kind of just general, broad language. But in the late 80s, our court recognized a right of privacy under the Minnesota Bill of Rights that protects what are called fundamental rights. Mm-hmm. Those are generally rights that are critical to those things such as life, liberty, and property. They are things such as the right to be free from intrusive medical treatment. Okay. This is the Jarvis opinion from the late 80s. Persons civilly committed were given the opportunity to have a hearing on whether or not certain types of neuroleptic medications or other antidepressive treatments, such as electroconvulsive treatments, could be administered.
Right.
I mean, traditionally, some of that was done without their input, against their will.
Lobotomy.
Yeah, well, it was tough. And, we recognize the right to be free from intrusive medical treatment as a fundamental right protected by the right of privacy under the Minnesota Constitution. The Minnesota Constitution means there's provisions in the Bill of Rights that refer to protections from certain types of intrusive actions by the government.
Mm-hmm.
But it says pretty clearly in the Constitution that just because certain rights are enumerated, that doesn't mean that others that aren't enumerated don't exist.
Sure.
And so the drafters of the document clearly contemplated a scenario where rights could be evaluated and reviewed at a later time. And so that's happened in the areas of, reproductive health care. That's
right.
Been obviously a the Doe versus Gomez decision
right.
from 1995, where the Minnesota Constitution recognized a right to woman's right to choose has mm-hmm. been protected by the Minnesota Constitution. Mm-hmm. And we have discussed the right of privacy in other contexts. I think one case that came from our court in the late 90s, where in the Minnesota common law, Lake versus Walmart stores, we first declared that the right to privacy exists in Minnesota common law, meaning that a cause of action or a basis for a lawsuit could exist for intrusion into the right to privacy, intrusion upon seclusion, appropriation and publication of private facts. In that case, back when we were actually developing photos, Rich, a couple had taken right. some photos of themselves showering during a trip to Mexico and dropped mm-hmm. them off at the Walmart store. I think it was in Dilworth, Minnesota, to be developed. And the Walmart had flagged at least one of the photos as not being appropriate. And then it turned out that employees of Walmart had apparently disseminated some of the photos.
Yeah.
And there was a big lawsuit. And for the first time in 1998, we declared that a cause of action could exist for essentially what is invasion of privacy.
And that's how Dilworth, Minnesota is remembered. And boy, aren't they proud.
Yeah. So, the Constitution Rich, is the fundamental document that governs Minnesota and the federal law. Minnesota has the right to recognize rights beyond those that the federal government protects. We can't do less than the federal government. But we have the right in the Minnesota Constitution to interpret our laws more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
And so under the legislative, common law, and constitutional area has developed this whole area of right to privacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is complex. I mean, this is the stuff for law review articles and
yeah.
for law review, you know,
right.
law school courses.
Right.
And it's difficult to get too deep into the weeds on this
right.
Because it becomes really technical and complex. But essentially, you know, people do have a right to privacy in Minnesota to protect what are called fundamental rights. And those rights cannot be abridged. They are subject to strict scrutiny, meaning that there has to be, you know, to do anything to impinge upon a fundamental right, there mm-hmm. has to be a compelling state interest, and this is the only means necessary to accomplish that. It's the highest form of judicial scrutiny. And, you know, those sorts of discussions have happened in a number of our cases over time. I mean, obscenity, you know, do you have the right to,
right.
you know, possess obscene materials in
right.
your own home
right.
versus the right to commercially, you know, transact in those materials.
Sure.
I mean, the court has recognized distinctions in those things. So, Rich, it's a challenging and evolving area of the law. Let's just say that.
Yeah. And there are people, in fact, some very high-powered people who believe that the Constitution does not guarantee a right to privacy.
Well, there's different interpretations of the Bill of Rights
yeah.
and the rights that the Constitution gathers. And the question is, if it's not expressly enumerated, does it exist? And that's, you know, those are really tough questions.
Right.
I mean, we see some of those interpretive questions in other areas of the Constitution, too. You know, the Second Amendment, right to bear arms, that
yeah.
sort of thing. And,
yeah.
you know, the United States Supreme Court recognized in the 60s certain fundamental rights related to free association, reproductive freedom, you know, marriage and reproduction,
mm-hmm.
Griswold versus Connecticut, obviously Roe versus Wade, which
yep.
has now been in Casey, which have now been overruled. And, you know, these are fundamental questions about,
yeah.
you know, the right to personal autonomy,
right.
the right to associate freely. And, you know, as I said, these questions are continuing to percolate in the court system. So, you know, I'm not going to say anything further about, you know, how those cases could come to the Supreme Court. But the people should just be aware of what the general meaning of those words are.
Right, right.
For I think for most of us, maybe the one area where we see the right to privacy being the most important is, you know, protected healthcare records. The
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a law called HIPAA,
mm-hmm.
which protects the dissemination of confidential records. If
mm-hmm.
you go to a clinic or a hospital, you have to sign all sorts of forms
mm-hmm.
where the providers are notifying you of your rights under law, and you get to designate to whom that material could be shared, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a child, whether it's another medical provider, to prevent people's, you know, private medical data from being disseminated. The right to certain other material that the government collects, you know, driver's license information,
sure.
How much of that is public. The Minnesota Governmental Data Practices Act fundamentally concerns itself with the right of the people to access material that the government collects
mm-hmm.
and how much of that is, you know, confidential, how
right.
much of it's private, and how much of it is public.
Right.
And that's a really complicated area of the law and something that the courts deal with all
sure.
the time.
Is this what we apply to a relationship between an attorney and a client as well?
Well, that's an area called a privilege.
Okay.
Privileges are created by law, by statutory law, sometimes by common law. And yes, the right to a attorney-client privilege, the right to a doctor-patient privilege, the priest-penitent privilege, you know, how much can a clergyman be
sure.
required to talk about a confidential right. material. Our court decided a case recently regarding records held by basically sex assault counselors, centers right. that protect provide counseling and treatment to people who have been victimized by horrible sexual violence. What rights, in that case, do defendants have to see information that's contained in those records? Mm-hmm. That was a tough and challenging question. The court held unanimously that privilege is an absolute privilege mm-hmm. that's, you know, not even subject to. Sometimes judges look at records in what they call an in-camera or in-chambers review process to see what might be relevant, and that gets that happens oftentimes with like child abuse records or other medical records where a court screens them and decides mm-hmm. What could be useful. But in the case of these sex assault counselors, we held that the law says what it says. It's an absolute privilege, yep. confidentiality. So, yeah, you should be able to go talk to your lawyer, Rich, about, important confidential, areas and get advice without that being mm-hmm. The subject for, government intrusion or other people knowing about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. And if you can't answer this question, I will understand completely. And I hope you'll forgive me then for asking. Do you believe in the right to privacy?
Do I personally believe in the right to privacy?
Yes, sir.
Well, I do. I mean, that's obviously a loaded question.
It is.
I mean, again, we talk about the broad nature of yes. that question.
Yes.
I mean, it is a fundamental concept that's been recognized in federal and state law. I think where the rubber meets the road is how the general phrase applies to specific situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all have the right to, for instance, under federal and state law, to be secure in our homes from unreasonable searches and seizures. Mm-hmm. Some people would look at that as a form of right to privacy.
I would. Yes.
The government can't, kick your door open without a, search warrant based exactly. on probable cause that, you've committed a crime or evidence of a crime could be found in your home. You have a right to protection of healthcare information, mm-hmm. medical and records, mm-hmm. Things that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. How those rights pertain to personal decision making, personal autonomy, things such as marriage, reproduction, intimate relationships, mm-hmm. contraception. I mean, these have been the real hot button areas over the last 50, 60 years, frankly, right. in both federal and state law. And so I am not going to get into specifics on how I feel any particular one of those issues would come out, but I follow the law and respect the law. Obviously the principle the Latin phrase is stare decisis. It has been decided. And
okay.
so generally speaking, when a legal issue has been decided, courts are bound to follow that unless there is a compelling and necessary reason for a new decision to be made. And so, we are bound by decisions that we have issued unless we have a legitimate and compelling reason to look at those again and say mm-hmm. there should be a different decision made.
Yeah.
And so, that promotes stability in the law, that promotes consistency. People know what the law is and can apply
right.
it.
Right. The thing that really inspired me to study political science when I was in college, I'm fascinated by the Constitution and the ability to interpret it so many different ways, I guess. I think that, frankly, we talk about James Madison, but even our state constitution has been written to sort of adapt itself to the times. And when we're talking about something like right to privacy, I mean, that's a perfect example. And I just think that that's one of the great things about this country.
Yeah, our Bill of Rights makes it clear that the enumeration of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or impair other rights inherent in the people.
Yes.
And so the drafters of our state constitution intentionally left that phrase very open and very subject to interpretation.
Yeah.
What are rights inherent in the people, and how does that change? Do we view this as from a lens from 1857 or 58 mm-hmm. when that document was drafted?
Right.
Or is that today, you know, when certain amendments were put together? And yeah, and that's an ongoing legal scholarship debate about originalism, textualism, you know, from what lens do we interpret constitutional provisions? And this is the stuff of, you know, tomes of law review articles discussing. And it's an issue that you see coming through in Supreme Court jurisprudence on different types of areas. I mean, there's some strongly held differences on some of those views. And I will refrain from jumping into that fray today, but it's a what you've pointed out a fascinating part of constitutional law.
And it's what keeps people like you employed.
Well, in part, yes. I mean, we do things other than constitutional law, but obviously, yeah, in Minnesota, we are the final interpreter of the state constitution. And so when there are disputes that come to us, sometimes we do have to decide them based upon constitutional privileges. I will say that we avoid that when we can. I mean, if we can decide the issue by, you know, interpreting a statute, or if we can do it on common law without having to go into constitutional analysis, we generally try to do that because, you know, the legislature is the people's body, legislative body, you know, we three independent co-equal branches of government. And, you know, we are we owe deference. We owe the legislature the opportunity to work within its parameters. And so it is, we are not a super legislature, I guess, you know, the, you know, the kind of the notion of the court of general inquiry that can sort of, you know, rewrite the law to our desires. I mean, the legislature writes the law, we interpret the law, and it is when the law crosses the boundaries of the Constitution where it's our obligation to say so, to step in and say, hold it a second here. This one goes too far. This law is overbroad, you know, First Amendment type issues where it gets into protected speech. I mean, those are issues that are commonly before us, so First Amendment questions and statutes.
What you just said feels like we could talk about that for that's a whole other show. That's a really interesting statement in and of itself. But anyway, we're going to let that go for now because our time has expired. Justice Gordon Moore, thank you so much for joining us yet again.
Thanks, Rich. It's always a delight to be down to KYMN and to talk to you and our listeners about general legal issues.
Well, we appreciate you being here and look forward to more of these conversations.
Yeah, I enjoy it too. We'll see you in October.
Looking forward to it, sir. And that is Legal Talk for the month of September. We will be back on the third Monday of October. And thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.